This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime. We'll begin with the adventures of Philip Marlowe this week and the Covered Bridge, his story from January 14th, 1950. After that, it's Rogue's Gallery and the Impossible Murder, his story from May 16th, 1946.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gut of the prison or the grave. This time, everything that happened from the orange-haired man with a map past the oaf with a pitchfork to the body at the Covered Bridge was wrong. Dead wrong.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Covered Bridge.
You know, every once in a while, into the life of one Philip Marlowe, a little peace and quiet must fall. A day marked by neither murder nor mayhem. No phone calls. Just nothing. I was just beginning to like it, too, when the door opened and a head full of slick orange hair walked in. It was on a man wearing a new flannel suit, a hand-painted tie, and a reckless grin. He shoved the telephone out of his way, sat down on the corner of my desk, and sized me up with a pair of careful gray eyes.
Got a proposition for you, laddie.
Tell me about it. Let you know if I'm interested.
You should be. There's good money in it.
It's not always the answer. Go ahead.
You got a good car?
Good enough. I don't keep it in the office.
You like Mexico?
Look, is this a social call or a quiz program?
Well, this is business. I asked you a question.
Yeah, I like Mexico. I don't like you.
Oh, that's good, because you're going to drive a couple of friends of me down there. Name your price.
Not interested.
$1,000?
Not interested.
That's too bad. Would have been nicer to work this out without a gun.
Listen, you're too big, jerk.
Talk easy, laddie. This gun is bigger than both of us. Now, you're going to drive across the Mexican border tonight with three passengers, and there won't be any difficult questions, because you are the well-known Senor Philip Marlowe, a respectable private detective. Somewhere below the border, your fellow travelers will catch a boat. But this you don't have to worry about.
Now, look, just a minute.
Look, laddie, I came to you for several reasons, one of which is that you're smart enough to know when to quit fighting the problem. Got to make a stop first, so let's go. And leave your artillery in the drawer. Come on.
Yeah, sure. Since I'm now an old pal of yours, what do I call you?
You pick it.
Believe me, you won't like it.
How about George? You like George?
Not particularly.
Good. Just call me George. Let's go, Marlowe.
We nodded at the elevator girl, waved goodbye to the kid in the parking lot, and headed south on Highway 101. All with the front of that Mauser nudging my kidney. It was screwy, but I was on my way to Mexico.
Don't get ambitious, Marlowe. Not too fast, not too slow. Just keep it rolling, nice and steady.
I did what I was told and watched for a break. For every foot of 100 miles down the coast. At Oceanside, we cut inland past Escondido and up into the citrus country. Once he dug a little map from his pocket and studied it while we headed into the hills where farms were farther apart. George was busy looking for a turnoff when my chance came, and it came fast. My foot slammed down hard on the brake. George's head struck the windshield, and the gun slipped out of his hand. I dropped 2 wheels in the ditch, but I got the gun. He took one look, then jumped out and ran in a low crouch for the back of the car. Before I could follow him, I heard the truck coming. It was a big two-section job rolling fast. It topped the rise just as George pivoted toward the road. The truck driver must have seen him just as he hit, because the air brake flocked on all 26 wheels at the same time. I ran to where George lay like a discarded doll at the side of the road. The truck driver was out of his cab before it stopped rolling.
I didn't see him. I didn't see him. I come over the rise there. I didn't see him.
Take it easy.
Honest, I didn't see him. Is he all right? He ain't dead, is he?
No, he isn't. He won't be walking much anymore.
It wasn't my fault, Mr. Honest.
I know it wasn't. Get hold of yourself.
Gosh, what should we do?
I want you to drive to the nearest phone and get the police and then come back. Here's my card. Give it to the troopers. Tell them they can reach me at my office.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
If I can figure out how to read this map of his, I'm going to pay a call on a couple of people who are expecting this guy. Maybe it's just a stubborn streak, but when I'm being used as a patsy, I like to meet the people involved. As I drove, I studied the map, and 2 miles down the highway, I found the first landmark, a dead tree. There I left the highway and followed a rocky trail 7 corkscrew miles up a canyon to the next landmark, a bridge. One that looked like it had been lifted out of some rustic Connecticut woods and dropped across the California Gorge purely by mistake. Because it was covered complete to roof and walls and made entirely of lumber. And on the hill beyond was a lonely house where the trail marked on the map ended. I drove slowly through the sagging wood tunnel and at the other end deliberately killed my motor. And I got out, raised the hood, went to work on the distributor. I don't know where he came from, but when I glanced up, he was standing there watching me. A bull in overalls with a pitchfork clenched in a pair of hands as thick as $4 steaks. We didn't like each other's looks.
You picked a bad place for trouble, mister.
That's so. Why?
Nobody almost never comes up this road, especially strangers. How come you took it?
Really want to know, or are you just killing time?
I wouldn't be too smart if I was you, mister.
You live in that house up there?
No, not anymore. I got canned for drinking. Why are you so interested in that place?
The only farm around here. Maybe they got a mechanic.
Yeah, maybe. Where'd you say you were from?
L.A.
Los Angeles, huh? You real sure you don't know anybody up there on the hill?
Like who, for instance?
A certain party who took a trip to L.A. not so long ago. And another thing, city boy, don't get out of line or I'll fix you good. Understand?
Oh, yes. Now, I mean, how do you do?
You want something?
Yes, my car stalled at the bottom of the hill.
Dolly, who is it? Who's there?
A man, Uncle Walter. He says his car broke down.
What's that? Your car broke down, you say?
Yeah, I don't know what went wrong, Mr.
My name is Brule, Walter Brule.
Oh, I'm glad to know you. I'm Philip Marlowe.
What are you doing on this road, Mr. Marlowe?
I thought it was a shortcut.
Did you? Well, you were wrong. It's a dead end.
Oh.
Come inside.
Thanks. Look, Mr. Brule, I'd like to have somebody who knows motors come down and look at my car, huh?
Mm-hmm. All right, when Ed comes in, I guess he could go down with you.
That's
my new hired hand, Ed Fry.
Oh.
I don't know, Uncle Walter. It's getting pretty dark.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing myself. As a matter of fact, if you can accommodate me, Mr. Brule, I'd just as soon rest up a while and shove off in the morning. I want to pay you for everything, of course.
Stay overnight? Oh, I'm afraid that's impossible.
Impossible? Why? What's the matter with you, Dolly? If necessary, I'm sure we can arrange to take care of Mr. Marlowe some way.
Well, okay.
Yeah, that's better. Now, if you want me, Dolly, I'll be out in the barn. Make yourself comfortable, Mr. Marlowe.
Your uncle, huh? He owns this place?
That's right. My mother was his favorite sister.
Oh.
You want a cup of coffee?
Oh, I'd love it. Haven't had any farm kitchen coffee in ages. You don't seem to have any visitors up this way, Dolly, huh?
No, not many.
Nice farm, though.
Stinks.
Is that why you run off to L.A. now and then?
How did you know about that?
I guess. I ran into a friend of yours at the bottom of the hill. A pair of overgrown shoulders with a pitchfork. Said he used to work here.
Him. He did up until a month ago. That's Noah Bickman. Big dumb goof. Here's your cup.
Oh, thanks.
By the way, Mr. Marlowe, where are you heading?
Oh, Mexico, maybe.
Mexico?
Yeah.
You kind of came a long ways out of your way, didn't you?
Did I?
Dolly. Dolly.
We're in here, Eddie. What's the matter?
A car at the bottom of the hill. Whose is it?
Car belongs to me. It's stalled.
Who are you?
This is Mr. Marlowe, Eddie. He's on his way to Mexico.
Well, you don't say.
And since his car broke down so late, he may stay all night. Uncle Walter said it'd be all right.
Is that a fact?
I'll go get some blankets, Eddie, so you can take them up to the spare room for Mr. Marlowe.
Oh, okay, Dolly. Mr. Marlowe, huh? Where are you from, Mr. Marlowe?
L.A. You?
Points east. You know, this road don't go to Mexico, Marlowe. In fact, it stops about a mile up the draw here. Kind of funny that you wound up on it, isn't it?
I don't see you breaking up over it, Eddie.
Don't let my poker face throw you, pal. Traveling alone, are you?
I am now.
Meaning what?
That there's nobody with me. That's simple, isn't it?
Not in my book, pal. I might even want you to draw me a picture of that one.
Here's the blankets, Eddie. Sheet.
Oh, okay, it's fine. Come on upstairs, Marlowe. I'll show you the room.
You want me to go with you and make the bed?
No, you stay here and put up some more coffee, Dolly.
All right.
Got a hunch I may want lots of it tonight. Let's go, Marlowe.
Right behind you, Eddie.
How's the weather been in L.A.?
Some might call it hot.
Uh-huh. Get the door, will you?
Sure.
Okay, how come it's you, pal?
I got good credentials, a car, and a tight yap.
You better be right on all three. How'd you find me?
Little map, Eddie. From Escondido to the dead tree to the covered bridge and then up here at the cinch.
Why'd you show alone? Where's Red?
Gotta meet us at the border.
It's a bum fit, pal. It's not in the book. Why?
Yeah, some kind of a last-minute jam with the boat.
Oh, that jerk. He's had a month to line this up while I've been holed up out here in the sticks making like a farmhand. Well, better work, that's all. If we're picked up this time, it's curtains. Oh, incidentally, you got a gun, haven't you?
Yeah, sure.
Let's see it.
Uh-uh. No dice, Eddie. Red didn't tell me everything, just enough.
So?
So you'll get your money's worth. I'll do what I'm supposed to do and no questions asked, for my little automatic and I stick together regardless, real close, together.
Okay, Marlowe. Suit yourself.
I will. And something else. The rest of the company is going along. Is that all set?
Well, we'll see about that when the time comes.
You're not leaving any loose ends around, are you?
It's not your worry, pal. We'll get out of here around 11. Oh, and that routine about your car being stalled, it is a gag, I hope.
Oh, sure, it won't start. If anybody tries, but in 10 seconds with a screwdriver, I can fix it.
You're okay, Marlowe. Just keep playing your game.
Yeah, I will. Maybe then I'll find out what the score is after all, huh?
You might at that. Come on, let's eat.
Dinner at the Brewer farm was as loaded with gay chatter as a bad case of lockjaw. And when it was over, the participants scattered like everybody else was contagious. I wound up alone in a dark spare room on the second floor, which had one advantage. Windows that viewed both the front and the rear. The moon was bright, so I didn't bother with a lamp. I listened to Dolly rattle dishes in the kitchen until that stopped, and then I watched old man Brule pace his front yard. Once Ed Fry went out and talked to him briefly, and then headed for the front door again. For a long hour after that, the big house was silent until from somewhere out in the back, there was a soft, metallic tapping. Eventually, I spotted a heavy figure outside tossing pebbles against a window pane downstairs, and he edged back through the shadows to the barn. A moment later, I saw the girl slip out a rear door and run across the backyard and join her. I went down the back stairs and out along the house to a hedge, and I followed that until I was close enough
it's
to
true,
hear.
It's true, I tell you. He's an escaped convict, a killer. He's been hiding out here on your place.
I can't believe it, Noah. I just can't. Are you sure?
Of course I am. I read it by accident just tonight in an old newspaper from Denver. The whole story with pictures. There's no doubt about it. Ed Fry is really Eddie Fillmore. He's a murderer, plenty of times over.
What do we do? Should we call the police?
No, not on your life. Listen, you want to get off this farm, don't you?
More than anything in the world.
Okay, then we'll do it together, Dolly. I didn't tell another soul about this. You know why? Because they put out a reward, a big one for him. $2,500, and we're going to get it. Just us, you and me.
But how, Noah? How can we possibly... What's that? Did you hear that, Noah?
That's nothing, nothing. One of the cats, maybe. Look, you've been taking walks with him lately, Dolly.
Well, yes, I have, Noah, but...
Well, never mind that now. Just get him to take another one right away. Get him to walk you down to Pritchett's house. I'll be waiting there, and as soon as you get inside, I'll jump him. You'll never know what hit him. Will you do it?
Pritchett's house?
Yeah.
Well, I'll try. You give me some time to persuade him.
Sure, sure. Oh, I knew you'd see things my way, honey.
Oh, no.
Boy, with that reward money, there'll be no stopping us. You better go in now before they miss you.
Okay. I'll get him there just as soon as I can.
Hey, Bickman.
What? Who's there?
Marlowe. Listen, I got to talk to
you. You were here listening all the time, weren't you?
Yeah, and believe me, you're making a mistake. You're playing with dynamite, Bickman. You two are nuts to tackle that guy alone. He's too tough for you.
So you want to help so you can cut yourself in on the reward, that's all. Well, it ain't going to work.
Don't be a sap. He's covered himself. There's somebody else in with him. Somebody around here. He's got an ally. You two try to grab him and you're going to be in trouble.
You're lying. He's been hiding out all alone, and we're going to get him, Dolly and me, by ourselves. And if you try to horn in, mister, so help me, I'll beat your brain.
Cut it out. Reward or no reward, you got to listen to me.
I got to nothing, though. Maybe that'll teach you not to stick your nose in, city boy.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, Fred Allen's first appearance on the CBS Jack Benny Show. Al Jolson sings, but the face is Charlie McCarthy's. Andy of Amos and Andy goes on trial for deserting his bride by mistake. Those are three headlines that guarantee you a world of fun on CBS tomorrow night. Yes, this third Sunday of the new year will be an all-time high in radio entertainment. Hear them all on CBS tomorrow night. Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Covered Bridge.
I didn't pass out, but my jaw hurt and my legs moved like they were rubber. Now I had to find the roving Walter Brule because he should know where Pritchett's house was, where the ambitious team of Dolly and Noah might be biting off a lot more than they could chew, healthy 4-H teeth notwithstanding. Mr. Brule! Mr. Brule!
Yeah? Hello? Who is it?
Marlowe! Come here a minute, will you? It's important.
Yeah, it's important. Now, what is it, Mr. Marlowe?
Your face!
He's your friend Noah. We had a few words.
Noah Bickman? He was no friend of mine.
Yeah, he's no friend of mine either. Look, Brule, I'm going to have to trust you. I've got no choice. Bickman found out Ed Fry is really an undesirable named Eddie Fillmore is wanted for the police by murder.
Murder?
And he wants to trap him for a $2,500 reward that's been posted and didn't want me in the way.
No.
Now, look, I'm not a passing tourist with motor trouble, but a private detective. Tell me, who is Pritchett and where does he live?
Pritchett? Where does he live? Mr. Marlowe, somebody has been making a joke on you. Elihu Pritchett died 20 years ago. He lived right in this house where I do today.
This is Pritchett's house here?
Oh, Pritchett's house? No, no, no. That is down the road near your car. The covered bridge. That is Pritchett's house.
The bridge?
Ah, you see... Elihu Pritchett was from New England, and he had a covered bridge on his farm there, so he wanted one here. He built it himself day by day, a board here, a nail there.
Oh, and since he spent so much time at it, people call the bridge his house, is that it?
Yeah, exactly. But then, why is it important?
Because of a meeting, Mr. Brule, a get-together that I don't think is going to be on the quiet side. Let me borrow your flashlight, will you?
Sure.
Now get back inside and call the police.
But what are you going to do?
Reinforce the reward, happy sweethearts, and keep an eye out for someone I haven't met yet. A third party Eddie Fillmore plans to tour Mexico with. It was a quarter of a mile romp country style back down to the covered bridge. When I was there, the Mauser I'd recovered from George in one hand, flashlight in the other, I found only the moon-washed, gray-covered bridge itself, trying to stand erect like an old soldier who has more pride than posture. But then as I stepped in the chalk road onto the sheltered oil-soaked planking, I found something else. Inside and face down was Noah Bickman. And lying nearby, the red-stained, icy fingers of the pitchfork that had killed him. I started to move closer. But then footsteps in the road behind suggested that I do different, so I moved quickly back to the bridge entrance, flattened myself into a narrow shadow, and waited.
Noah? Noah, is that you?
It's Marlowe, Dolly.
What? Mr. Marlowe, what are you doing here? Well, why are you down at the bridge at this hour? Where's Noah?
He's dead, Dolly. Huh?
He's dead.
He's in there, but don't go inside. Look, I tried to stop him, believe me.
Stop him
from
what?
Don't bother, baby. I know about Fry being Fillmore, the reward, all of it.
What? How?
Well, first of all, I'm a private detective from L.A., was dragged into this by an ex-buddy of Fillmore's. Second, I was in the barn when you and Noah made your plans. Oh. When you left, I tried to talk Noah into accepting my help.
Why?
Because I know what Fillmore's kind is like. I mix with him every day. I know how they work. Look, did you tell Fillmore to meet you here, yes or no?
No. No, I couldn't find him. I've been looking since I left the barn every place.
That's why you came down here just now?
Yes. I wanted to tell Noah that our plan would have to be postponed. But what difference does all this make?
I don't know. Maybe a little, maybe a lot. If Fillmore had known about this rendezvous you two planned, it'd be 20-1 that he got here ahead of schedule and took care of Noah.
But since he didn't.
Well, since he didn't, I'm betting on a third party, someone we haven't met yet.
A third party?
Yeah, now listen to me and do just as I say. Turn around and walk straight back up to the house, and when you get there, get inside and stay put.
But, Marlo, what if...
Go on, fast.
All right. But be careful, Marlo. Whoever killed Noah won't hesitate to kill you, too.
When she started back up the road, I turned toward the bridge again. My flashlight following the dusty white footprints on the freshly oiled planking leading to the dead man. I stood over in the circle of light sweeping the area around him. There was just one thing I had to know.
Marlowe! It's me, Walter Poole.
What are you doing down here?
Well, I thought you might need help, so after I called the police, I got my rifle and came down here and I...
Yeah, he's dead. The prongs on that fork went right through him.
How terrible.
Yeah. Look, Brule, was this planking freshly oiled today?
Yeah, why?
I just wanted to make sure those chalk footprints were made today.
But what do footprints...
Brule, you stay here and see that no one enters the bridge.
But where are you going?
Up to your house in a hurry, because I think I know who the killer and the third party is. City-bred legs and smog-fed lungs, I made it up to the house in record time. But as I reached for the front door, I knew that time hadn't been quite good enough. The shot had come from somewhere in the house, and by the time I reached the living room, I knew I was too late to do any good. In a chair at the far side of the room, Dolly was slouched down, a surprised expression on her face, while her hands tried to hold back a small stain of blood oozing through her blouse. Little, frightened words whispered out of her mouth.
He shouldn't have done it, Eddie.
Stand where you are, Marlowe. She had it coming to her, the two-timing louse.
Eddie, I'm trying to tell you. You don't understand.
I understand plenty, you no good little...
Eddie.
I was in the barn, heard the whole thing. You and that Bickman planning a switch with me out.
No. You're wrong, Eddie.
Dolly didn't try to double-cross you, Eddie. She only pretended to so she could set Noah Bickman up and kill him. That's what she did.
No, you're a liar.
It's true. That's what I tried to tell Eddie.
I don't believe it. Dolly. Is that true, Marlo? She didn't cross me. She was trying to help me.
That's right, Fillmore. Bickman found out who you were, wanted the $2,500 you were worth, dead or alive. Dolly had to play him along for your sake.
I should have listened to her. I should have listened. How'd you know all this, Marlo?
Found Dolly's footprints inside the covered bridge. Proof she'd been there before I found Bickman's body.
Yeah. And you know who I was, so you put it all together.
Well, you're holding the gun, kid. What's the next move?
Doesn't matter much anymore. I could still lam out of here for Mexico. Somehow I don't want to. Not without Dolly. Phone the police, Marlo. I'm not going anywhere.
It was several hours before the county police and Eddie Fillmore had gone. Walter Brule and I sat at the long wooden table watching the light from the fire dance across the hanging skillets and pans by the grate. And nobody said anything for a long time.
I suppose hot apple pie at 4 in the morning seems odd to a man from the city.
Not at all. 4 in the morning, sometimes the middle of the day in the city.
Yeah. Yeah. More coffee, Mr. Marlowe?
Yeah, please. Thanks.
You know, Dolly wasn't really a bad girl. It was just that sometimes she didn't think. And
a woman who loves like that doesn't think, Mr. Brule. She just feels.
Maybe in some way it is my fault, the whole thing.
No, no. It's nobody's fault, Mr. Brule. She was trying to do the right thing for the guy she loved.
Yeah. Well, your bed is still ready if you care to stay.
Oh, thanks. Sure, I'd like to.
If you can find your own way up, I think I'll sit here just a minute longer.
Sure. Night.
Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
As I sat looking out over the starlit countryside, I thought of all the great love stories written about the good people who love, live, and suffer. And then the pathetic face of Dolly and the pain-racked face of Eddie said, "What about us?" And I had no answer. Yeah, chalk up another one, Marlowe. Another one of those things for which there is no answer.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman McDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Leavitt. Featured in the cast were Vivi Janis, Ben Wright, Jack Moyles, Wilms Herbert, Jack Crucian, and Barney Phillips. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time a twisted mind, a hole cut in a wire fence, and a corpse in a storeroom. All added up to freedom. But only for the one who had it coming.
The event you've been waiting for. Fred Allen's first visit to the CBS Jack Benny Show will take place tomorrow night. Yes, the most famous guest appearance in radio, the Fred Allen Jack Benny Act, will be heard on all of the CBS stations tomorrow night. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Clap a while, let a song be your style, you stitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, you stitch shampoo.
F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. I guess it wouldn't be polite for me to make the statement that Judge Colin Baker was a snake. I'll just say I think there was some truth in the rumor that he did shed his skin 3 times a year. The judge, who isn't a judge anymore, was a big barrel-chested guy with a dramatic mop of wavy white hair worn in a sort of a modified windblown bob, the better to impress the juries with. He'd made himself a reputation back east as a fire-eating DA, and then later as a hanging judge. He'd been out here about 5 years and had built a statewide reputation as a brilliant criminal lawyer on a set-a-thief-to-catch-a-thief basis. He had just won a big case, and he was having a cocktail party at his penthouse apartment on top of the building which housed his plush offices. Betty Callahan had covered the trial, and now she and the photographer from her paper were covering the party. I tagged along. Oh, there was a dandy crowd there. Pasty-faced politicians, tired-faced women, and the old two-faced judge in all of his glory.
I think it's a lovely party.
Oh, Richard, isn't this a lovely place? Clear up here on top of this building. Just like living on a mountain.
Yeah, only you can't lock the bottom entrance of a mountain. You see anybody here you would really like to know?
Now, don't be bitter. You know I had to come here tonight. I don't like these people any better than you do.
Well, get it over with as soon as you can. Let's go someplace where I can take my hand off my pocketbook.
Well, well, my dear Miss Callahan, I'm sorry I couldn't get over to you before. Indeed, I am. I saw you come in, but Richard Rogue, I'm so glad you could come, sir.
Thanks.
And now, my dear, I suppose you like some pictures. I see you have a photographer with you. How thoughtful of you.
Yes. Could I get a group around the fireplace? Just you and the people connected with the trial, the defendant and the witnesses.
Of course, I'll round them up for you immediately.
Oh, thank you, Jerry.
Yes.
Mike.
Yeah? You ready to go?
Hey, they're sure serving good liquor here. Real scotch. None of that near scotch I get at the bar.
Good. Now, here's what I want, Mike. Get me some shots of the group that's forming over by the fireplace.
Right.
We'll put the judge in the middle. And have everybody congratulating him and the man he saved from the gas chamber.
I can think of a few captions for that picture.
Richard.
Yeah, we couldn't print him. You can't call a prominent guy like the judge a crook. And you can't call a murderer after a bought jury says he's not. You get the idea, Mike.
Come on, Mike. You stay right here, Richard. I'll be back as soon as we've covered the art angle on the story.
And then we leave, right?
Yeah. Just as soon as I can, dear.
I wandered around in the crowd and listened in to scraps of conversations. Jim Dorset, an oily politician on the judge's payroll, was talking with a Mary Miller. Mary is a self-made wealthy widow whom the judge had defended after she'd poisoned her husband. She was glaring hate at the judge like a death ray, and I moved within earshot of them.
Well, Mary, you enjoying yourself at this testimonial to our friend's genius?
I'd rather be at his wake. I'd enjoy my cocktails more.
You can count me in on that, too. I'm surprised at you, though, Mary. He got you out of a pretty bad spot, didn't he?
Yes, for exactly half the money Fred left me. I didn't kill Fred, you know. I was innocent.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, here's to meeting you again soon at his wake.
Happy little gathering. The laughter, which was bouncing off a high ceiling, had all the gay spontaneity of an open grave. But everybody was getting along with the judge. He was a big man. He had lots of money, lots of power. In a way, I couldn't help admiring the old boy, posing over by the immense fireplace, tossing that snowy mane of his about, and filling the rooms with his deep-throated laughter. Betty finally got all of the pictures she wanted and came glaring over to me. I got a little lump in my throat like I always do when I see Betty. Oh, if Mark Anthony could have seen her, Cleopatra would have been in the second barge, rowing.
We'll leave in just a moment, Richard. We have to stay and drink one toast to the judge. He's going to be hurt if we don't.
Well, I wouldn't want to cause him pain.
Oh, he's getting our cocktails now. He's going to bring them over.
Okay. Did you get some pretty pictures of the old windbag?
He's charming. I like him.
Hmm.
Shh. Here he comes.
How can you like a guy like that?
Well, here we are. Hope they're not too strong. Miss Callahan, I wonder if you would forgive me if I borrowed Mr. Rogue for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I have something I wish to ask his advice on privately.
Why?
Couldn't we make it tomorrow, Judge? Betty and I are...
Tomorrow will be too late, I'm afraid, Mr. Rogue. This will only take a few minutes. You won't mind, will you, Miss Callahan?
No, of course not.
Okay, all right, Judge. Where do we go?
My study, right through here.
All right, Judge. Yeah, right. Judge, you sure did a fine job.
Now, I received a rather alarming note tonight, Mr. Rogue.
Yes? When?
It was under my glass when I returned to the serving table after those pictures were taken. Here it is.
Hmm. Paper and envelope from the dime store, huh? Well, can't trace them.
Hmm.
Well, let's have a see here. Hmm. Have a good time, you murderer. You won't be alive at this time tomorrow night. You're going to celebrate an anniversary. You can't run so far that I won't find you and kill you. Hmm. Unsigned, of course. Printed in block letters with no skill. Anybody could have written that.
And anybody could have left it there on the serving table.
That's right. There have been 100 people drifting in and out of here. You, take the note seriously?
Rogue, I've had threatening letters before, of course, but this one, well, I have a hunch about it. A premonition.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. First, when it comes to good grooming, your mirror can't tell you everything. It can't tell you how much clean, fragrant hair adds to that indefinable something called charm. Don't take chances on detracting from your loveliness. Keep your hair fresh and clean-smelling at all times by using Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo regularly. This clear, golden liquid shampoo lathers magnificently and washes away dust, dirt, perspiration, and unpleasant odors from your hair. Fitch's Saponified Shampoo is made from mild coconut and pure vegetable oils. It never leaves the hair dry or harsh feeling. Thus, you can use it as often as you like and be sure that your hair is shining clean and free from offending odors. Have a professional application of Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo the next time you're at your barber or beauty shop. Or buy a bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. Ask for the economical large size, 16 ounces for $1. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
I didn't want to go to the party in the first place, but I wanted to be with Betty Callahan, and she had to be there. It was a victory cocktail party which Judge Colin Baker was throwing to celebrate the fact that he'd cleared another guilty murderer. I wasn't particularly happy when the judge took me in his study and showed me a note threatening him with death within the next 24 hours. In fact, I didn't pay much attention until I looked at the judge's face. He was scared.
Rogue, I've had threatening letters before, but this one... Well, I have a hunch about it, a premonition.
What are you going to do about it?
The safest place in the world for me to stay is right here in this penthouse, and I want you to stay with me, Rogue.
Me?
I'll pay you well for your time, and...
What's well?
I'll give you $500 if you'll stay with me for the next 24 hours, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, 500 clams, huh? Well, Judge, that makes it very interesting.
You'll accept the assignment, then?
Like a flash. Just let me explain it to Betty Callahan. I was supposed to take her out tonight.
Very well. I'm sure Miss Callahan will understand when you tell her about the fee. I need you, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, you're so busy you have to break your date with me. That's a habit of yours, isn't it, Richard?
Well,
you won't ever have to do it again. You'll never have another chance.
Oh, but Betty, baby, listen. The judge figures someone is going to try to kill him tonight. You don't want to be a party to a murder, do you?
You're not worried a bit about the judge, and you know it, Richard. You're thinking of that $500.
Well, is that bad? Five bills will buy a lot of entertainment. You can have a lot of joy on $500. Don't knock it. Don't sneer at it.
Well, I suppose I might just as well get Mike to take me home. I should have known that you'd get a better offer. You always do. Mike!
Yes, Miss Callahan?
Miss Callahan, I'm afraid I owe you an apology.
Oh, no, Judge. I can't very well blame you if my friend Richard is so crazy about that money.
Judge, I got word for you. I can't take the assignment.
But I have your word, Mr. Rogue.
Well, I wouldn't want you to break your word with anybody else, Richard. Oh, no. Are you ready, Mike?
You can shove off, Mike. I'm taking Miss Callahan home.
Well, okay by me.
I'm really sorry, Judge, but...
Now, look, you two youngsters. There's no point in having a disagreement over this. Why don't you just stay here until the rest of the guests leave? They're beginning to leave now. Then, Mr. Rogue... You can take Miss Callahan home and come back.
That would leave you alone for about an hour.
There's only one entrance to this place. That's my private elevator. I'll give you the key. You can lock it as you leave. No one can possibly get up here.
Oh, I don't want to cause all that trouble.
Oh, it'll only be a little while, baby.
I hope you'll do this favor for me, Miss Callahan. I need Mr. Rogue's moral support tonight. Even at my age, I feel that I'm too young to die.
Betty and I hung around for another hour until all the guests either walked or were helped from the cocktail party. Then the judge and I went through the penthouse like acid goes through cotton. We looked under everything that was raised from the floor and behind everything that stood a foot high. Then we turned on the floodlights and searched the area surrounding the penthouse. Then the roof. There was nobody there. The judge was alone when Betty and I rode his private elevator and locked it with a foolproof lock before we got into my car and headed for her place. Betty was annoyed, and that ride home was as romantic as a tub full of wet wash. But she'd been annoyed before, and I wasn't worried. I left her at her apartment and fiddle-footed out to my car. I opened the car door, bent to get in. Oh! Lightning struck me in my ear. I heard the thunderbolts rocketing past and latched onto one. For a wild ride through the firmament. Stars kept exploding in my face, but I hung on... until I saw my home away from home. Oh, good old Cloud 8. I let go, dropped an eon or two, and landed as softly as a smoke ring. I didn't open my eyes for a moment.
Hello, Igor.
I didn't think you were ever going to get here, Rogi. I was worried.
Where have I been?
I saw you go by here a couple of centuries ago. You went right past. I saw you way upstairs knocking at the pearly gates. But they wouldn't let you in.
Igor, this isn't... Oh, tell me that this isn't...
Oh, no, Chiefy. You're way north of there, and you're alive.
Oh, I'm glad to know that. What happened?
Somebody knocked you out of the park, Rogi, and then you went for an automobile ride, and then...
Oh, I gotta get out of here.
Oh, yes, you do. You've been gone a long time. An old friend of yours is trying to get through to you. You know what time it is, Rogi?
No.
It's 9:30, back Emma. Over you go, Chiefy.
All right, Igor. Give me a shove.
So long, Chiefy. See you next week.
Hello, Urban. Hey, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm trying to get these handcuffs off you.
Oh, where are we?
We're in the hills above Mulholland Drive. Somebody brought you up here, chloroformed you, and handcuffed you to this tree with your own handcuffs. You need a bodyguard, Rogi.
How did you find me?
Oh, I got a phone call telling me where you were to bring a file. Stand still or I'll leave you here.
Oh, okay. Who did it?
Waiting for you to tell me that.
Oh, I don't get it.
Somebody wanted you out of the way for a while, Rogi. Now, do you want to tell me what you're mixed up in?
I wasn't on a case, and I... Ooh, careful. Oh!
There. Now, you have to get a new chain for your bracelets, but anyway, you're unharnessed from that tree.
Look, Urban, I was supposed to be bodyguarding Judge Colin Baker last night.
Bodyguarding that crook? Why?
Well, he got a death threat, and... A note found on the serving table during a cocktail party.
Go on.
Yeah,
somebody promised to kill him within 24 hours.
What'd you leave him for?
I took Betty Callahan home. Somebody must have followed me when I left the judge's penthouse.
They knocked me out as I left Betty.
Maybe we'd better check on the judge's health. Maybe that note wasn't kidding. How do you feel?
Woozy.
You can hang your head out the window on the way back. We'd better see whether your client needs a bodyguard or an undertaker.
My head was full of feathers and my hands felt heavy on my arms. My mouth was lined with brown blotting paper and my shoes were full of lead. I wasn't feeling very well as I got in Urban's official sedan and headed for the penthouse where I'd left Judge Colin Baker. My head ached like a broken heart until I took a couple of pills from Urban's first aid kit. And by the time we pulled up in front of the office building, I felt like I had a chance at living if I wanted to, and I decided I wanted to. The private penthouse elevator was still locked, just as I'd left it. That made me glad. We entered it.
Maybe we should have called before we took this trip.
No, I want to see the old boy. I owe him an apology, if he's still alive.
How could he be dead unless somebody else had a key to this elevator?
Well, they didn't. The only other key is on the judge's key ring. He told me that.
And what are you worried about?
I'm not worried. I just hate to give him back those nice, crisp C notes. That's all. I hope he's up. Well, this is it. Oh, good Lord. Well, the judge will never be any debtor.
Blue in the face. He's been strangled, Rogi.
We'll continue our story in just a moment. First, a word to the ladies. It's long been acknowledged that fragrance and charm go hand in hand. But unpleasant hair and scalp odors can banish charm in a hurry. By using Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo regularly, you can keep your hair flower fresh and fragrant. That's because Fitch's saponified shampoo makes billows of fragrant lather, Lather that floats away dirt, oily film, and displeasing odors from the hair. Then the lather rinses away easily and completely. You see, Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo contains its own special patented rinsing agent. This rinsing agent works right with the plain rinse water to assure you that your hair will be sparkling, radiant with all its natural color highlights. And there's no danger that your hair can offend others with unpleasant scalp odors, for Fitch's saponified shampoo leaves it dewy fresh and fragrant. Next time, ask for Fitch, F-I-T-C-H, Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. Maybe I was surprised when I saw Judge Colin Baker looking up at me from the floor of his living room. I'm not sure. I had a hunch. Don't ask me why. I just had a hunch that he was dead when Urban brought me out of that stupor up there above Mulholland Drive. Judge Baker's face was as blue as a policeman's coat as he lay there, and his eyes were staring, wide open. Urban and I walked over to him.
He's been strangled, Rogie.
Yeah, looks like it. Huh. Any marks on his throat?
No marks. Looks like there was a struggle, though. Table kicked over.
How could anybody get in here? That elevator was locked. There's no other entrance.
What are you trying to do? Tell me this guy's not dead?
No, he's dead, all right, but how could he be strangled? Cigarette, Urban.
No, thanks, Rogie. So, he was murdered, wasn't he?
Yeah,
That calls for the medical examiner.
Well, I don't get it. There was nobody here when I left. There's been nobody here since. There's a peculiar odor in here. Smell it?
No. Sit down, Rogie, while I look around. There's been a murder. You're mixed up in it, and I want to talk with you.
Oh, you think I killed him? I didn't know him that well. Wasn't even mad at him. Hey, what's that?
A check. A check for $2,500 made out to the victim and signed by Mary Miller. Was she here last night?
Yeah, she was here. And she didn't like the judge. But I never heard of a dame her age doing a human fly act.
Maybe she had a key to the joint.
But she didn't. Believe me, she didn't.
Where's the phone?
Oh, it's in the bedroom.
I'm going to use it. Wait here, Rogue.
There was a peculiar odor in that room, a faintly familiar odor, but I couldn't place it. My poor old beat-up mind was whirling a million revolutions a minute and getting no place. And then I remembered the note the judge received. It had mentioned an anniversary. So I decided not to wait. Instead, I took that long elevator ride and grabbed a cab for the library.
May I help you?
Oh, yes, I want to see the files on the Gotham City newspapers for the last 10 years.
All right, sir. It's going to take me some time to get them out of the storeroom. Any specific date?
Yes, I would like to see copies of the editions 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 years ago today.
All right, sir. If you'll just have a chair. You sure you'll feel all right? You look ill.
Oh, I always look like this, thank you. Just get me the papers, please. They're mighty important. Confidentially, I think they're going to solve a murder. The librarian got me the papers. I went to work on them. Gotham City was the city where Judge Colin Baker had made his reputation as a hanging judge. My hunch was as strong as a bride's coffee, and it paid off. In the issue for 7 years ago that day, I found the name of Judge Colin Baker on the front page. A man he had sentenced to the chair for murder had been executed, screaming his innocence. Within an hour after the electricity had torn through the body of this man, Harold Michaels, the real killer had confessed. And this was the anniversary of that legal murder. I called Betty Callahan at her paper. She wasn't there. She was covering the police investigation of Judge Baker's murder. I took a cab back to the judge's penthouse.
Oh, isn't this terrible, Richard? If it hadn't been for me insisting on you taking me home, the judge would have been alive.
Or I would have been dead.
Where have you been, Rogie? I told you to stay here.
I'm not doing your work for you, Urban. I got the motive for this murder.
You have, did you?
No. What did the medical examiner have to say, Urban?
Oh, you know the doc. He just did a little muttering about cyanide. Won't give any official opinion until he's had a chance to analyze the contents of the body. What's your theory on the motive?
Well, Hey, Betty, where are you going?
I'm with the working press. Mike and I are going to get some pictures.
All right.
I can hear that massive intellect of yours ticking, Rogie. And I recognize that far away look in your eyes. Now, what goes? Don't stand there like a dummy. If you've got any theories, let me in on them.
Cyanide, huh? Look, Urban, this place is air-conditioned, isn't it?
The penthouse is. The building isn't.
Yeah? I'll be back in a minute.
Hey, where are you going?
I'll be back in a minute. I want to check that theory of mine. Cyanide. That word brought back that dainty smell I'd noticed in the apartment when Urban and I had discovered the judge's body. Cyanide. The odor of cyanide is brought out by cigarette smoke. I had been smoking when I detected it. The pieces of this murder were falling in place like a well-trained chorus. I found the ladder that led to the top of the penthouse where the air conditioning machinery was located, ran up the ladder, gun in hand, and there he was, the murderer. Just lifting an earthenware crock from inside the housing of the intake fan on the air conditioning system. Put it down, Mike.
Make another move toward me, Rogue. And I'll let you have this crock full of acid right in your face.
What good will that do you, Mike? You can't get away.
Another 5 minutes and I would have been home. Free. How'd you figure me, Rogue? Why'd you have to horn in?
I looked up the Gotham newspapers for 7 years ago today, the day Judge Baker executed a man named Harold Michaels, an innocent man. Was he your brother? Your name's Michaels, isn't it?
He was my father. And I executed the man who executed him in his own private gas chamber, just like they do it at Quentin. I waited a long time for the chance.
Look, Mike, I'm not arguing right or wrong with you, but now you're a killer, and I'm going to take you in. Put that crock down.
Oh, I don't think so, Rogue. I'll just stand here. I have to think.
Just for my information, Mike, how did you delay the action of the gas until you knew the judge would be alone?
I thought of everything. I didn't want to hurt anybody but Baker. I hung the cyanide pellet over the acid on a piece of cotton cord. I tested it half a dozen times. You know, it took a drop of acid 3 hours to eat through the cord. I'm glad I killed him, Rogue.
I'm coming after you, Mike.
I'm not waiting, Rogue. I don't like the gas chamber.
Mike. Don't. Come back here.
I'm not sorry for anything. Tell him that was my payoff line, will you, Rogue? So long.
No. Don't, Mike. Don't jump. Mike's plan for murdering the man who'd caused his father's execution was as near perfect as any murder will ever be. While the guests were having whoopee at the cocktail party, he put that jar of acid in the air conditioning intake, hung the cyanide pellet over it, and was back at the party, leaving that note before anybody missed him. When he found that I was going to return to spend the night with the judge, he had to knock me out, get me out of the way for at least 5 hours. 3 hours before the cyanide fell into its acid bath, and 2 more hours which it took for the air conditioning system to completely change the air in the penthouse. That was clever, I thought. It looks like I did it again. Had a narrow escape, though, but that didn't bother me. I drive every day in the Los Angeles traffic. You know what I mean? This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. Be with us again next week, will you? We have a story for you about a black-eyed senorita from Argentina, a Latin-type corpse, and a mysterious gold piece. We call it Latin-type.
Laugh a while, let a song be your style, use Fitch Shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch Shampoo. Song be your style, use Fitch Shampoo. Laugh a while, let a song be your style, use Fitch Shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch Shampoo.
After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find a lot more from Philip Marlowe, Rogues Gallery, past episodes of this podcast, and everything else Relic Radio at RelicRadio.com. There's also a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows, would like to help support them, click on that. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.